originating from our Jimmy John's of Lexington studios. This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
But it was all for Chuck McGee. Super Sabre wins the Derby for Todd Fletcher.
Basalt will give trainer Steve Asmussen career win number 6,000.
It was all have another for Doug O'Neill.
Oxbow and D-Wayne Lucas. Trainer D-Wayne Lucas, a sixth win.
And Al's Rosie is going to give trainer Gary Contessa his 2,000th career win.
And Dialed In never got to them. It was Animal Kingdom for Graham Motion.
Steve Hobby with career victory number 1,000 at Oaklawn.
Now here's Mike Pena and Jude Feld.
Hello again, everyone. Good afternoon and welcome to the show Trainers Listen To, Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Happy to have you with us on Sirius 219 XM 206. And for all of you listening to us on our website at horseracingradio.net around the world, welcome to Trainer Talk. Promises to be another fun show as we look back on Breeders' Cup with one of the trainers who was victorious at Del Mar. We'll tell you more about that here in just a minute. Mike Pena, Baron of the Backstretch, Jude Feld, Pontiff of the Pick Four, in our Jimmy John's of Lexington broadcast studios and ready to roll for the next hour, JT.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. This is going to be a great show.
You know, Breeders' Cup was so good to us. I mean, everybody at Breeders' Cup, we want to thank them for everything that they did to make our week an enjoyable week and to help our shows go really well. Everybody at Del Mar was just great. I think by most accounts, as we were leaving the track, talking to people who were fans or horsemen, everybody seemed really happy with the way that Del Mar handled everything and wouldn't be shocked to see the Breeders' Cup return there at some point in the future. But one of the highlights for us has to do with our special guest here tonight, somebody who is as classy as they come, a hardworking individual, and to see those kind of people have the success on Breeders' Cup days and big days like this is really special.
Yeah, it's always great when the good guys win, and this is definitely a good guy.
All right, without further ado, tonight's guest is a native of Avery, Texas, who began training on his own in January of 2004. He spent some time working with his dad by the name of Morris Nix, and then spent about 14 years as an assistant to Hall of Fame trainer Bill Mott. He first joined us on this show, Trainer Talk, back in April of 2013. And how about this? At that time, his runners had earned just over $8 million. 4 years later, his total purse earnings for horses that he has saddled have now surpassed the $19 million mark. Fresh off saddling the Breeders' Cup Fillies, Juvenile Fillies winner, that's Caledonia Road, and that is Ralph Nix, who joins us now. Ralph, welcome, my friend.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Good morning to everybody, or good afternoon, whenever this will be broadcasted.
Yeah, recording it here on Wednesday morning, going to air Wednesday afternoon for people listening all over the world. First of all, $19 million in purses. You take home the Juvenile Fillies. Hey, dinner's on you tonight, my friend.
we got to get the check first, and I might be a little tight.
Are you still on cloud nine?
We train horses for a living, so every day can be a bit humbling I kind of have that personality. I try to stay pretty even keel, but it's very enjoyable. I just feel very blessed and very fortunate to get this accomplishment and get this accomplishment at this age. I mean, a lot of people have to wait till, they're in their 70s and stuff like that, like Art Sherman and such. So I'm just very, very lucky.
It was quite emotional for you afterwards. I think that's a feather in your cap. I think a lot of times people don't realize how much winning a Breeders' Cup race means. And you kind of illustrated that after the race.
Well, I mean, it's one of those things. I mean, all the years working for Bill Mott with the champions I was around there were Paradise Creek, Cigar, and Cena, Gina, et cetera. Got to throw a leg over a lot of good horses, got to really be involved on a personal basis, every day with those type. Then growing up from Avery, Texas, when the $10,000 claimer was the special individual in the barn of about six or eight to get to experience what I have. And then, you know, 5 years ago when Gulfstream Park started year-round racing, was down to 12 head and was wondering where I was going next. To be, you know, in the winner's circle for the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies and, you know, a real strong candidate for a champion two-year-old filly, it's just kind of hit me.
Yeah, well, Ralph, Jude mentions how emotional you were, and we thought we would take you back to that moment through the eyes of Horse Racing Radio Network and our broadcast of the race. Immediately after the race, you caught up with our Joe Clancy, who was working with us doing winner circle interviews and paddock interviews, and here's what that moment sounded like for you.
All right, I'm standing on the track with Ralph Nix, Breeders' Cup winning trainer. How about that?
Well, it's one of the dreams, you know, coming up the way I did and to be on the stage, it's amazing.
Yeah. Beautiful. And your filly was great. Coming off the turn, were you confident that you could run her down?
Just sustain a run. That's all I knew, to sustain it. You know, she got a little tired at Belmont last time and, you know, made a little early move. And, you know, she was wide both turns. I mean, she ran a huge.
Well done. Congratulations.
Thanks, John. Yeah, big effort here. And, Joe, boy, that was impressive, wasn't it?
Yeah, very much so. The best, the more impressive thing was Ralph Nix's reaction. That tears running down his cheeks, and you can tell it really means something to him.
Tears running down his cheeks. Yeah, very emotional, Ralph, I can imagine.
Yeah, it was a very touchy moment. I still get some goosebumps as we talk about it now. It's hard to believe.
Yeah, going back, we had dinner together during the September sale. Did you have a feeling at that time that this filly might be something special, or was she just another horse in the barn at that time?
No, she had started showing it. You know, we brought her in May to Belmont, and you know, she was a little slow coming. Took her a while. She's big and leggy, and you know, we took our time with her, and she started showing it as soon as I got to Saratoga with her, middle of July. I mean, her first work at Saratoga was better, and just in timing. I mean, as she got closer to her first effort, each work was better. Her gate work before she ran the first time to me was very, very outstanding. And then the next breeze was just trying to go easy with her, and she just kind of wowed us that morning. And, you know, I had a lot of confidence in her in her first start, and I thought she'd carry on well into the Prezet. I mean, she just continued to get better as the fall has went. You know, and then after the Breeders' Cup, I mean, she handled it kind of like a walk in the park. I was very, very surprised that she wasn't any more fatigued than she was.
Joe asked you about coming off the turn and if you knew you had it won, and you said just sustain that run. That's all you wanted her to do, was sustain that run. Take me back to watching that stretch run, Ralph. What was it like?
If they'd had the cameras on us, we'd look like Steve Asmussen. Between me and Luke Paymont, which is Zooming Fish, and my wife Stacy, I mean, us three was very close together. And I don't know who was hollering the loudest. Probably my wife, because her vocal cords were a little stronger. But it was wild. I mean, I looked up at the 516th pole and I seen the way she was passing horses. And I was like, all she's got to do is maintain this, because the ones in front were already starting to be asked to go somewhere, and you know, in every stride, I mean, she's, you know, just gathering them up with ease.
Well, Ralph, if you don't mind, I took the privilege of pulling another clip from our broadcast that happened right after Joe interviewed you. Shortly after that point, Mike Smith, the rider of Caledonia Road, came back through the winner's circle after having his picture taken, and he caught up with Joe, and here's what Mike had to say.
We're going to check back in with Joe Clancy, who is trackside now, with a very special guest.
Oh, he almost stuck himself on a railing. I'm getting to Mike Smith. He's hugging a few people, a few other things, signing some autographs. Oh, look at that. He just pulled his boot down, and he has the word go-go for his good friend Garrett Gomez written in the inside of his boot, which there's a little color for you. So we're still going to get to this interview, I think. Hang on. One more picture.
You know, Mike Smith has been so good over the years, and you know, you mentioned Garrett Gomez, who sadly took his own life. Boy, what a tribute.
Yeah.
Mike, you just won the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies of Caledonia Road. How's that feel?
Oh, just amazing. I think it's even a little extra special because me and Ralph Nix grew up together.
Yeah, that's what I thought. And you could tell how much it meant to Ralph. What's it mean to win a race for him? That's probably as big as anything.
First Breeders' Cup, and then with us winning a race together, you know, he was an apprentice when I was riding with him. I used to fold him up in his fold-out couch every morning because he wouldn't get up in the morning. And now look at this. We won a race together with him training and me riding. Pretty special.
Yeah, definitely. Well done. Congratulations.
All right, Ralph, I got to hear that story.
Yeah, well, actually, it wouldn't get up in the morning. We were in the afternoon. It was me and him and David Lidberg. I had a camper trailer at Larry Snyder's RV park in Hot Springs, Arkansas, and we were all kids, you know. So I guess I was 16 at the time. Mike would have been 18 or turning 18. And, you know, he was just starting his career starting to do well. And, you know, with just a bunch of teenagers running around together having fun. And actually at that time, Mike was bigger than me, and him and Dave put me in the – we had to hide a bed out for some reason, probably playing around, and they stuck me in it, folded it up, and jumped on top of it a time or two. We've got a lot of other stories that probably don't need to be broadcast, but we've had a lot of fun through our years knowing one another well. So,
how hard was it to get Mike Smith? How did that come about?
Well, it was good. I mean, after she ran the Frisette, and you know, a couple of days later, after we decided to go, seeing how she came out of the Frisette, she was training well, and you know, going out there, I noticed that Mike wasn't really riding any of the main California horses. I said, well, let me give Brad a call, and I text Mike, got Brad's number, and asked Brad, you know, would they be available, and he said sure. He said, I think that Philly have a big chance. He said, I saw the racing in New York, and you know, same thing. She got a way bad wide, a little bit of an early move, and should move forward in her third race. And you know, here we are giving interviews afterwards.
Yeah, talk about how much more special it is to win a race like this with a good friend by your side like Mike Smith.
Well, it's what it's about. I mean, I have an old saying, they have a fence around the racetrack to keep all of us in instead of keep people out. And, you know, me and Mike go back to the riding days through the glory days at Mott's, you know, when I got to leg him up on Paradise Creek and a lot of good horses there. And so it's nice. I mean, it's at Coast and have been for several years now, so our friendship's not as close as it would be if we were still in the same location, because, you know, we'd obviously be out to dinner probably weekly.
According to the PPs, you hadn't won a race with him in at least a year. Had he ever ridden for you before?
Or? We're one for one.
You might want to stick with that guy.
Well, with him being 52, if I put him on one, they're going to have a chance. You can bet that. Because with me riding races, I know how taxing it can be on the body and that sort of thing. So, you know, there's people should have an admiration for Mike Smith for staying fit enough and able to compete at this level at this time of his life.
Was he always like that? Was he always a guy that took care of himself and went to bed early and all that stuff?
Well, he's high energy, so you know, he's always very active. So he's always doing something.
Ralph, when you guys were living together, when you were 16, he was 18, did you have a sense that Mike Smith could turn out to be this good?
Well, I mean, he was always doing well. You know, he's one of the four, you know, he's one of the ones that had the talent, and he always seemed to do well. I mean, everybody hits little slumps, but they, you know, you may hit a slump. His talent level and his success kind of was, you know, he was always somewhat successful, and then he ended up being extraordinary. So it's not a surprise, no.
Talk to you and trainer Ralph Nix here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Ralph, it was interesting when I was doing some homework for our broadcast, and I went back and looked at your other starters in the Breeders' Cup. All of them have come in the Juvenile Fillies. Now, Caledonia Road was just your third Breeders' Cup starter, but, you know, boy, to have that way with the ladies, so to speak, and to be so good with these young fillies, what's the key to getting a young filly up to a race like this, like the Juvenile Fillies?
I think it kind of like being married. You learn to stay out of the way.
Good call.
Even with the young fillies?
Yeah, pretty much the same. I mean, the fillies, I don't know. I have had a lot of luck with the fillies. I mean, I've had some luck with the Colts also, but the fillies, for some reason, it seems like I have had a little bit more success with. I don't know if it's, the ones I've received or just their precociousness or what it is, but I don't have a handle on that, but so far it seems to work.
Did you happen to run into Bill Mott after the race at all?
Yes, after we left the test barn and went back to the barn, me and Luke did to check on the filly, and him and Tina and Riley were there. They hit Bill late, and Bill's horses were down at the other end of the barn from where we were at. We were in the middle, and we had a bit of a emotional moment there. I mean, it was fun. Bill was laughing at me, and he said, expressed how proud he was, and I said, you did it the hard way. You didn't do it the billionaire way. You did it, you bought her and mapped out the whole thing, and she wasn't $1 million horse. I mean, she was $140,000, which is still plenty of money for a horse in my mind, but in today's world it doesn't seem to be.
Yeah, talk about picking her out at the sale. That's a good point, Ralph, that, you actually bought her and took her all the way through.
Well, me and Luke did it together. I mean, got to give him some credit. He has a few things that he believes in, with the Nick ratings and some pedigree stuff that he likes. So he gives me a list of, things that he thinks will fall into his price category, and then he lets me go pick the horse. So he does the catalog work, and then I do the individual work, and then we put it all together on the ones that I like after we go through the horses and decipher the ones that we want to have vetted, and then we start trying to put a value if we think we can afford them or not.
Yeah, that was one of the beauties of her pedigree. Outstanding. She should go as far as they write races, pretty much.
Yeah, I mean, being a quality road, and then I have a Ditchy Union mare, I mean, you would think, to have, and then looking at her, she's got two turns and class written all over.
So what do you do now, Ralph? What's the next steps when you have a filly that's this good?
You got to be looking at the Kentucky Oaks and plan backwards. I mean, I'd like for the Oaks to be 6 weeks from now, good as she's doing and good as she came into it and all, but that's where we got to hope everything stays together, stays in one piece, and try to lighten up on her a little bit for a while. Let her go ahead and mature and grow into that big frame she has, and maintain some fitness where we don't have to really train on her too hard whenever it gets time.
I'm assuming you'll take the Florida path to the Kentucky Oaks?
Yeah, it's possible, or probable. I mean, being here at Gulfstream and she's here now, that would be the – probably the first choice of anything. If you look up and depending on how the races are coming up and that sort of thing and weather and everything, I mean, everything will be factored in. I mean, she'll be nominated everywhere and, we'll have an open mind to it. With hopefully the last race being, before the Oaks, 4 to 6 weeks in front of it.
Yeah, you mentioned lightening up on her for a little bit. Will she get a break completely and be turned out just to be a horse for a little while, or what does that entail?
I will round pen her some here at Gulfstream and tack walk, jog walk, whatever. I don't like sending them to the farm back to that, because sometimes they go too much backwards. It's different if they have an injury or whatever, which she's, as of now, very sound. So, and she's still a bit high energy. She's in the stall bucking and playing this morning. So, she's not going to be able to be completely shut down. It could be detrimental to her in my mind.
How many times have you watched a replay of the race, Ralph?
Be honest with you, I watched the stretch run a lot. I think I've seen the whole race one time since it ran. Wow. Just because of being shuffled around, TV interviews and everything that hits Twitter or whatever, it always shows the last bit. I got to try and figure out. I want to get the NBC coverage and everything and sit down and have a little party at the house and rewatch it all.
Did they interview you on NBC too?
Excuse me?
Did they interview you on NBC as well?
I don't know where all our interview went. They took us in a room and there's a table, and it was sent different directions.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Ralph Nix here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. All right, here's the important question, Ralph. How'd you celebrate Saturday night?
Well, it started when we got back. Well, it started when we went into the press room toasting with champagne, and then it kind of continued all through the races that day. And then Mike had a private party at his house, which I was already going to, and went there. And then we ended up at the LeVerge's champions party. But by the time we got there, a lot of people had left. The last picture they had of me, it was me and Scott Blasey having cocktails together, which, you know, with Gunrunner, me and Scott being very close friends for lots of years. And that was kind of late into the evening, might have been early the next morning.
Well, what a great Breeders' Cup, right? Not only do you win the Juvenile Fillies with your good friend Mike Smith, but your other good friend that you just mentioned, Scott Blasey, involved with Steve Asmussen and Gunrunner, and they win the Classic. You couldn't have drawn this up any better, could you?
Well, I mean, it was a great day. I mean, there was, you know, a lot of people got there first. Peter Miller from California, which I don't know Peter, just, you know, I know what he looks like when he walks by. And that's about all I know about Peter. But John Kimmel, which I'm very friendly with, you know, to get his first one after all the years he's been at it, and, you know, kind of up and down in the game. And it was special. I think he had a lot of, you know, I don't want to say deserving people in a selfish way, but there's a lot of people that work hard to and stay loyal to the industry to get some victories.
Yeah, it was that kind of a Breeders' Cup. And was it your first trip to Del Mar?
I'd never been to California. I went to Hollywood Park to look at a horse one time, and the cab waited on me to fly back to Kentucky. It was a turnaround. So other than that, ever being to California, I had not been. And when I stepped off the plane in San Diego, I could not believe how nice the people were out there. The weather was outstanding. And then the whole, you know, the whole setup, the way the whole thing was ran, it was so easy and so enjoyable.
If you're going to have this kind of success in California, you might want to take a whole string out there.
Hey, it wouldn't be hard to talk my wife into it, because we damn sure enjoyed Del Mar.
Well, Ralph,
and that,
you know,
was before, and that was before we even ran. So,
you know, when you were working with Bill Mott, people will remember that you had the privilege of working around, you know, Horse of the Year and Classic winner Cigar. You were involved with Phrase, who won the Turf in '92, and a Gina and a Cena, those Distaff victors. That had to be special then, but compare the difference in the feelings with winning a Breeders' Cup race when you're an assistant and now doing it on your own.
Well, I mean, I think, you know, when you're an assistant, especially, you know, the type of person I am with my personality being there, I mean, you look at everything and treat it as if it's a big piece of your own. But I think the emotions described that of me after the race, because I didn't have the tears. After those, it was always enjoyments and high fives, and this one, it was just, I don't know, maybe I'm getting soft as I'm getting older or what, but, you know, thinking of my mom and dad and stuff like that growing up, you know, with the claiming horses at Louisiana Downs as a kid, that it just, you know, it's very meaningful.
Are your mom and dad still living?
Yes. Mom lives in Florida and dad lives in Louisiana, and they'll both be here for the Eclipse Awards, and hopefully she'll be voted champion.
So tell me about those conversations afterwards. Those had to be special too.
Well, they're both 70 now, and mom was ecstatic, and dad probably, he sounded 10 years younger. So it was, I think I've got two proud parents right now.
Yeah, that's great. It's great that you were able to share that with them. I think sometimes people don't realize, you know, how hard trainers work and what it means to them when they win a big race, because they know, you know, what they've gone through to get there. And it was just a pleasure to see you do it, because you are a hardworking guy and you've been at it a long time, and it's kind of your family business. So it's great when you have that opportunity.
I think it made it extra special, and I realize, I mean, I'm a very humble person, and I realize, you know, how blessed and how privileged you are to get to do that, because there's so many people never even get to think about or dream about, you know, competing on that stage with those type horses or handling those type horses. And I've been fortunate enough through, you know, through Bill, 13 years, and then, you know, even, you know, the greatest state winners I've had myself, and, you know, like this year sweeping the Stallion States on the male division this year at Gulfstream. I've had a lot of success above what, you know, a lot of the everyday people have, and I realize how fortunate and how blessed I am, because there's a lot of good horse trainers out there that never get the opportunity.
Yeah, you see that sometimes, you know, a trainer will pass away or something, and it'll say, you know, he trained two stakes winners, and you just think, wow, you know, this guy worked his whole life, and he never got to accomplish what somebody else might have been able to do in a shorter period of time. It's pretty amazing sometimes.
Ralph Nix here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. Ralph, just a couple of minutes left before we have to get to our commercial break here at the bottom of the hour, but spend just a minute or two talking about the connections, the owners, Zoom and Fish Stable, Charlie Spring, and Newtown Anner Stud.
It's very interesting. It's very rewarding, because Luke Paymont, which is Zoom and Fish, was a large portion owner of Speechify with Team Valor, and that's how we met. And we became pretty friendly, and 2 years later, after Speechify was running, one day we were talking about, you know, him and his horse business stuff, and I kind of asked him, I said, why do you want to be a 5% and 10% partner? You know, I said, you could be, you know, a little more involved and have a little more exposure and hopefully get lucky. And he thought about it for a year. And Charlie Spring, I call him Invisible Man, I have never met. I spoke with for the first time after the Breeders' Cup, even though I've had horses for him for 2 years, because Luke is who I speak with out of those two. It's very rewarding, the second year of them buying some yearlings together away from the large syndicate, to have a Breeders' Cup winner. And that's only with five yearlings purchased. So, and then I did these two by myself. Newtown Anner Stud, I've had a few horses for over the course of the summer. And with Nick Salusto managing them, Nick always liked the filly. He had saw her in March at Abracadabra. We went to look at some other horses and had followed her all through the course of the year. Then they bought into her after the Frisette. So it's so far everything's worked. It's been very manageable, and, you know, we're off to a good ride, and hopefully it'll have some continued success between the group.
Yeah, it's a great story and a great accomplishment. Ralph Nix, our special guest on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. We're going to get to a short commercial break. When we come back, well, Ralph's been associated with a few other great stakes winners in his career. We're going to talk about them, and we'll tell you a little bit more about Ralph growing up in the horse industry, too. That's next on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. Make plans now to attend the Fasig Tipton Mid-Atlantic December Mix Sale, Tuesday, December 5th in Timonium, Maryland. The sale will be followed by a special Horses of Racing Age supplement. Entries for this supplement will be taken until November 21st, and nominations are now being accepted for the 2018 Fasig Tipton Gulfstream Sale, being held at Gulfstream Park in Hallandale Beach, Florida on March 28th. You can nominate to this premier two-year-old in training sale by visiting FasigTipton.com. That's FasigTipton.com. Where will you be?
Bloom Racing.
Majestic City could also still do it, and here he comes.
Majestic City running a big one.
Started by former jockey and 35-year racing industry veteran Jeffrey Bloom, Bloom Racing offers racing partnerships, bloodstock services, pinhooking, and private race management.
Soul Driver the leader, though. Soul Driver in front.
Experience the fun, excitement, and exclusive access of racehorse ownership with Bloom Racing. Forming racing partnerships now. Get in on the action at BloomRacing.com.
It all started with a dream. A dream to be the best. To breed the best. To race the best.
Super Saver Rosa Maya
stand to stand the best. Windstar Farm, dedicated to the dream.
Earn 25% more for every win when you send your horse to Virginia by taking advantage of the new Virginia Certified Program. Simply send your horse to reside in Virginia for 6 months prior to December 31st of their two-year-old year and be eligible for a 25% owner's bonus for wins in New York, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Delaware, Maryland, and West Virginia, regardless of state bred status. There's value in Virginia with the new Virginia Certified Program. Visit vabred.org for details.
This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Caledonia Road is circling up four wide. Just went by Piedi Bianchi, and she's into fourth. In the meanwhile, we've got a new leader. It's Alluring Star, who's taken over here from Moonshine Memories, who's thrown in the towel. Alluring Star up the turn in front. Caledonia Road comes on. Piedi Bianchi trying to weave through traffic, swings to the outside. Alluring Star, here's Caledonia Road running on by. Blonde Bomber from the back of the pack comes late. Caledonia Road and Mr. Breeders' Cup Mike Smith have done it over Alluring Star and Blonde Bomber in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies.
Larry Colmus with the call of the Juvenile Fillies and Caledonia Road proving best last week at Old Del Mar. Welcome back to Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Jude Feld in our Jimmy Johns of Lexington broadcast studios. Ralph Nix is our special guest here tonight. As you heard in the first half of the show, he is the man who trains Caledonia Road, who will now be pointed toward the Kentucky Oaks on the first Friday in May at Churchill Downs. That's the race you're going to hear exclusively with us here on the Horse Racing Radio Network, and we hope to be able to interview Ralph again in the winner's circle after that race, too, in just a few months. Ralph, this show will be podcast on our website, horseracingradio.net, so you can tell all your friends and spread the word to all the owners that, hey, I'm talking about you and saying nice things here on HRN.
All right.
That was just another way for me to plug the podcast and work that in there a little bit. No, really, it was, Ralph. That was your cue.
You guys are good at it.
Having a lot of fun here with Ralph here on Trainer Talk today. All right, so Ralph, let's go back to the beginning a little bit. And, you know, you talked about growing up around your dad's operation and then segueing into working with Bill Mott for all those years. Take me back to the beginning. How did Ralph Nix get started in the game?
Well, I mean, father being growing up in East Texas and growing up on the farm and back in the day before when kids could be kids and had to earn their keep, as I used to say. You know, dad and mom not having much money. We had a few horses. Obviously, I learned to ride when I was real young on riding horses, and dad started me galloping. Started my first thoroughbred I galloped. I was 8 years old, and then continued on and started riding match races when I was 11, and we carried on to, you know, we'd go to Louisiana Downs in the summertime. And I'd spend, you know, riding the ponies around in the back and helping take care of horses, and, you know, would gallop at the farms and probably cheated and gallop a few at Louisiana Downs before I was of age, if anybody was looking. But so it just carried on. You know, it's all I know. It's what I grew up doing, and, you know, have a lot of it, a lot of education, because instead of, you know, having a PlayStation, I had a horse in front of me.
Yeah, it was a different time then, and kids started at a lot earlier age. Talk about riding match races when you're 11 years old, what that's like.
I probably didn't. Well, number one, there's no fear. So, you know, going fast and, you know, making sharp turns on half-mile racetracks, I mean, it wasn't a big deal. You know, which I haven't galloped thoroughbreds in about 5 years now. I don't know that I'd want to go at that pace into the one of those sharp turns as I did when I was at that age. But I wouldn't trade it, because it made me who I am. I mean, I think the work ethic and the appreciation, you know, come from that.
What do you remember about the first match race that you actually won?
Probably don't, to be honest with you. I mean, we went on weekends in Texas to a friend's farm, and you know, at that time, 11 years old, I mean, you're worried about going fishing or not. You know, I mean, it wasn't a big deal. You get on the horse, you rode him fast as he could go, and you were happy when he was on your way home.
It was more like a job than it was entertainment, huh?
Well, yeah, it was fun. I mean, that's just what we did. We looked forward to it because it wasn't a job. It was entertainment to us. I mean, a lot of people go to ride horses for enjoyment, and we were getting to do it, and I was getting paid for it at a young age.
Tell me about realizing that you probably weren't going to make a career as a jockey, but maybe as a trainer. How did that decision come about?
Accident.
Really?
I wasn't the most successful jock, and I broke my back when I was 19. And the next year, when I was back galloping horses and back in good shape, with the weight scale in those days, 112 pounds was the average, the average. And if you tied to 114, you were on the heavy side compared to the weight scale nowadays. And that next summer, weighed 120 or something. And like I said, I wasn't the most successful and didn't have the super talent anyway. And at a restaurant one night, I looked at it and said, I'm going to continue eating. So that kind of chose a different path. And at that time, it obviously wasn't training horses. It was just, 21 years old and just working, making a living. But what happened on the training side, the first Breeders' Cup at Gulfstream Park, the Louisiana Downs, they used to have the big festival around the Super Derby. They had the Golden Harvest, the Architects, and people came from all over the place to run in those races. That was back when Sunday Silence had won the Super Derby, or the year after. And Bill Mott had brought horses in, and he actually got on the horses himself for those races. And I was a freelance gallop boy, and they had to stay another week. And Larry Edwards and Frankie Brothers, told Bill that, it would, that I was fine to get on those. And that was the year that Frankie brought a Peeling Breeze to the Breeders' Cup, and Bill brought Sweet Roberta, which is second to Go for Wand. And I came to Florida for the Breeders' Cup with them, and I never left. I got to South Florida and, 22 years old at the time, and sand, beaches, and cold rain at Oaklawn Park. It was kind of an easy transition to stay in Florida. And then 6 months later, Tim Jones left to go raise his family in Arkansas, and I took Tim's place as an assistant for Bill and went to the Midwest. And from then on, that just kind of, it was, that's what I did.
Now, when you started out working for your dad and stuff, you must have learned a lot from him growing up you were able to step into that assistant job pretty easy.
Well, I mean, we had no choices. I mean, it was me, him, and Mom. We had the horses, and, you learned how to clean stalls, take care of horses, and read the horses, feed the horses, medicate, whatever needed to be done. We it was all in house. So, I had a lot of history, a lot of education, that you learn. I mean, there's no way not to learn it if you just pay a little bit of attention. You don't even have to be trying at a young age. If you do it every day, it becomes part of you.
Ralph Nix with us here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasic Tipton on HRRN, taking a look back at his win in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies with Caledonia Road, and now talking about that upbringing and the background that Ralph possesses, and you see how he has done it. He has come up and worked his tail off, and to get to this level is pretty special for Ralph and his entire team and his entire family. Ralph, if you could put your finger on the one thing that you learned from both your dad and from Bill Mott that you still use in your operation today, what are they?
Treat the horse right. Try not to, there's a time when they're good and there's a time when they're not good. And I would think it would be more about reading the horse. I mean, both of those two, you know, Bill, my dad never has gotten to be one of the fortunate guys like we talked early on to get to have these type of horses. At the end of the day, they're a whole lot similar because they both came up, you know, with well-educated people. They both were very, very, you know, they're part horse, both of them. I mean, they can read the animal very well, and I think that was one of the pluses from working for. If there's a comparison of the two, it would be able to look at a horse and, you know, kind of read their expressions and understanding what's really going on.
Do you have a favorite Bill Mott moment that you like to tell from when you were working with him?
I think just the whole experience was, and you know, the big thing was the way the horses were. I mean, you know, one of the most rewarding things was when Cena won the Breeders' Cup Distaff at Churchill, which, you know, I had the Churchill division, but she always seemed to do well under our care. I mean, he sent her down 6 weeks before. I mean, I feel that's very, you know, very rewarding, showed a whole lot of trust to have, you know, Philly is going to be one of the favorites for the Breeders' Cup Distaff. You know, to talk to him on the phone every day, and, you know, I think he came down once or twice in between. Of course, was there, you know, a week or 10 days before, but to entrust us with those type, you know, and he did that a whole lot of times, but that would be a name that, you know, people would know.
So that really might be considered your first Breeders' Cup win, although unofficial one.
Well, I mean, that was Bill. That was the team, and that's the way I look at it, and I look at it now, too. I mean, I've got Sonny and Heather that work for me, and Heather, you know, was in New York with this filly, and very much the same. I mean, she'd done one hellacious job with Caledonia Road from the whole time because I go back and forth. So you have to entrust some people to do as you would, or be able to communicate well enough to know that, you know, things need to be, you know, there needs to be a adjustment made somewhere.
Ralph, you didn't waste much time after going out on your own in 2004, winning your first graded stakes race, and it came with a horse by the name of Cool Conductor. Tell me a little bit about Cool Conductor.
Well, that's kind of, you know, that horse was given to me by Mr. Garner from Bill Mott, but I was somewhat involved in the purchase of him. I'd had him on a list, and then Dave and a friend of his came to me that asked what I thought about him, because he came from the Eddie Woods consignment, and the horse was a buyback. And I said, well, I liked the horse. I had him on a list, you know, that I liked, and they purchased him. And then, then he went on, I was still working for Bill at the time. And Bill had him in New York. He'd won the Hawthorne Derby, I believe, with him beforehand as a 3-year-old, and had been off, and he was coming back. And Dave was always, when he first became an owner, was with Bill, but being from in Kentucky, you know, I dealt with him every day. So he was one of my backers, and that horse ran at Churchill, and, you know, and Bill wanted to run him there where he, you know, thought he would win. I think he might even disqualified that day. And then he came to me. I mean, I knew the horse well, and then we went on to the Dixie and won that, was fourth in the United Nations, won the Arlington Handicap that year.
Yeah, it was a special performance by Cool Conductor. Went on and took the Grade 2 Dixie that same year too, right?
Yes. So you won the Grade 2 Dixie and the Arlington Handicap that year.
Yeah.
Won both races.
Yeah, just a huge effort from Cool Conductor. And then you came back the following year, and you had another Graded Stakes winner with the Arlington Matron Handicap victor, C. Siren. Tell me about that horse.
Well, that was a special thing. Adam Ritchie from Texas owned her, and, you know, she was one of them horses, just kind of an allowance type, and it was a funny race, probably not the strongest graded stake, but, you know, she was doing well at the time, and Mark Guidry rode her that day, and Fred Amy, which is a good friend of mine, had Mark's book, which Mark, me and Mark are very friendly also, and Freddie held me off almost to entry day to ride her, and I was actually at Saratoga. I wasn't on hand that day for the races, and And I told Bart what to do with her and did exactly the opposite, and she went, but I don't know, 6 or 8 lengths that day.
Well, that's pretty good when it works out that way.
Absolutely.
So the following year, no, we don't come back the following year. You come back in 2009. So you had to wait a couple more years for that next greatest stakes win. And Seaspeak was the name of the horse who won the Dallas Turf Cup Handicap.
Yeah, that one was a lot of fun. That was Dr. Chandler's horse, and he had came to me off a layoff. And we'd run it Churchill. And he was still eligible for an A of them, but he was already stakes placed at Keeneland the year before, and you know, he's just a big, nice horse, and the plane was going dots, so let's go take a shot. And well, when the noms come out, he ended up going off like 2-5 or something that day, and he blew a front shoe, run out, you know, won easily, and it was a lot of fun having Dr. Chandler kind of help coach through that one, because he's such a special guy and an icon in our industry, and Doc was a big supporter of mine whenever he was a bit younger. I still have one for him now. I've got probably one of his last horses, I guess, because he sells most of them, but that was a lot of fun and very, very rewarding for the connections.
Yeah, what's it like training for Doc Chandler? I mean, is that a little bit of pressure, or do you just get along with him so good you don't worry about it?
No, I call it easy. He understands. He's been in the game so long, he understands the ups and downs, and you know, he's realistic about it, and you know, he hires us to do a job and lets us do our job. I mean, he's always been very good with me.
You know, Ralph, you mentioned in the first half of the program selecting Caledonia Road, or at least helping to make that decision to purchase Caledonia Road. You just mentioned a short time ago that you were involved with Cool Conductor in that respect too, on some level. When you're looking at purchasing a horse, what are some of the key qualities that horse has to possess for Ralph Nix?
I look a lot for just their presence, and then, you know, everybody looks at the way they walk and this and that, have their opinions. You know, you're looking at the athlete, and I think a lot of it has to do with their presence. I mean, when they walk out and you bring, you know, there's a herd of them standing out there, I just have a feel for the right one. I mean, I've gotten lucky a couple of times. I mean, you got to buy a lot of them. I mean, if it was simple and easy, we'd all go buy one for ourselves, and you wouldn't have 20 phone calls a day. but I mean, if it was that simple, I mean, there's a lot of luck involved. But a big thing is I remember Carl Nasker used to go look at the eye. I mean, they have a smart eye on them. And I just their presence, the way they carry themselves. I never forget, the days with Cigar in Paradise Creek. I mean, they just had that, I'm standing over the top of you, look at them. I mean, they lead out, just because there's another horse there the same size as them, they stood taller for some reason.
Yeah, I always, people ask about presence sometimes, because trainers talk about that a lot, and I always try to explain it to them, like, when you walk into a bar and you see that one particular girl, there might be 500 girls in that bar, but there's one that catches your eye, and it's the same with the horse. You can lead out a whole bunch of horses, and then you seem to know right away the one that you have an affinity for.
Well, exactly, and it doesn't always work. I mean, there's soundness issues, and sometimes they just can't run, I mean, they just you'll get a very smart horse, a beautiful horse, good mover, this and that. They're just not fast. I mean, it happens to everybody. I mean, there's no exact science to it.
Can you really look a horse in the eye and tell if they have that it factor?
Like I said, if it was easy, I think we'd be buying one or two, as many as we can. But there's certain things to a big eye, small eye, the horses with a white eye. I mean, we've all got our opinions about it. And I think it just all has to go together, and you have to be lucky at the end of the day.
All right, well, let's continue to look back on some of these other greatest stakes winners that you've been associated with since going out on your own, Ralph. And the next one that comes to mind is El Caballo, who won impressively at the fairgrounds with the Colonel E.R. Bradley handicap in 2010.
A very special horse. I mean, for Mr. Spence being one of my first clients and best man at mine and Stacy's wedding, very, very special thing. I think we purchased him as a yearling, if I remember correctly. And he might have been two-year on training, but I think he was a yearling. Big black, big pretty horse that had a lot of issues. I mean, before he had won that, he'd had two condylar fractures and wore four glue-on shoes. So he was a project, but he was a true racehorse.
And I can imagine that has to be rewarding when you get a horse like that and you kind of hold them together and you do everything you can to get that horse right, and then to see him achieve a graded stakes victory, that has to be amazing for you, isn't it?
Well, it was. I mean, and I don't want to call it a disappointing days when he got beat a half a lip in the Mervyn Muniz that same year. He got caught the only step that he was behind was right at the wire because his head was up. But he was a neat horse. I think he made, I don't know, 350, 400,000. And, you know, he was never, he had gotten hurt, had torn his sacrum as a two-year-old, and, you know, come back the next year, had a condor in one leg, went again another 6-8 months, condor the other. You know, he had a lot of things that he overcame to be a good racehorse.
Yeah, I was going to ask you what you might consider to be your greatest training feat, Ralph, but it sounds to me like it'd be hard to top El Caballo.
Well, that one there was probably that you know, they're all rewarding, they're all, you know, all fun. That one took a lot of work to get there. I mean, every day he was, you know, he had extra therapy every day. There was always something. You never knew what day you walked in, what you was going to have to be working on next with him.
Yeah. Is there any other horse that you've had, doesn't have to be a famous one, that you felt like, wow, I really did something special here?
Well, I think, Abby Kay would obviously be very, very special because she was one of them horses that never was a real good doer, but always was very, very talented from day one. I mean, very, called me from Abracadabra, and, you know, in February, her first breeze or two, he said, you know, you're going to like this one. And she always carried on. She's a horse that never looked good. But the thing is, you know, she ran in the test as a three-year-old and didn't run any good. And to come back and win the inside information off the seven-month layoff, and I never left the barn with her. I kept her in-house, and then win the Humana Distaff after that. You know, those two races there back-to-back off that amount of time off, I thought was, you know, very, very rewarding. And being, you know, homebred of Mr. Spence's out of the Lily Capote family, it is just special.
Yeah, she would go on and take the Grade 2 inside information and then that Humana Distaff too at Churchill. So a couple of massive victories for Aubie K, for trainer Ralph Nix, who is our special guest here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. Ralph, I guess that brings us to Speechify, who was your most recent Graded Stakes victor until Caledonia Road came along this past weekend. Tell me about Speechify winning the Grade 3 Mr. Prospector and that career of Speechify.
That was a very interesting animal. I mean, Barry Irwin, which I've worked on and off for ever since I started on my own, obviously has a lot of confidence in me, but he sent me a project there. He called me and asked me, he said, I don't know if you want to mess with this or not, but this horse has a entrapment in his esophagus and he can't swallow and he lives on a liquid diet. Do you feel like messing with him? And I said, well, the blueprint's there. We'll try it and see what happens. And, you know, he shows up and he basically lived on, we used to call it soup, because it basically was all liquid, that his nourishment. And what a neat horse. I mean, first time I breezed him, I was like, wow, how did somebody miss on this one at some point? And, you know, jumped up, broke his maiden by 10, and, you know, he ran very well. What a neat horse, and we've got him retired now. He's jumping fences.
That's cool. How challenging was it to have a horse that ate soup?
Well, you just had to make sure you didn't let him get hold of any grass because he'd choke. And then you'd spend 45 minutes to an hour, you know, helping get it past, because his swallowing area was about the size of a nickel.
Wow.
But it wasn't, you know, hugely difficult because, you know, when he came from Bill Riccio to me, I mean, I had the blueprint. I mean, just follow the blueprint. Don't veer too far off. I mean, I of course, tweaked his, you know, feeding program some and all, but in general, it basically, I mean, he drank his food instead of ate it.
No hay either, huh?
No, nothing. Mm-hmm. I mean, he can't pass it. I mean, when he broke his maiden, you know, he was real energetic, and he had walking back to the barn and gotten, didn't get away from the hot walker, but just reached over and got a bite of the grass, and they were, you know, like I said, 45 minutes or an hour that night getting it passed.
It kind of makes you think he should have been owned by Charlotte Weber. He knew all that soup, right?
Absolutely, Campbell soup.
Well, Ralph, only a few minutes left here before we have to wrap up the show, but I do want to touch on one point. You've touched on this with several of the horses that you've talked about, and you've had to do so much work with them, and you've spent so much time caring for them, and that's one thing that I think gets overlooked a lot of times in the mainstream media is how much, as trainers, you really love your horses, and you do everything you can to make sure that those horses are taken care of as if they were your children. So talk about that for just a minute, and that respect for the horse and love of the horse that almost every trainer possesses.
Well, I mean, I would say, you know, every trainer should possess that, and I would have to say that most do. Otherwise, we wouldn't do this. I mean, we're on the clock 24 hours a day, and they are. They're like kids. I mean, they rely on us to care for them. I mean, they're not loose in the field, and, you know, then we get them fit, and they're high energy, and, you know, things happen, and they're athletes. I mean, if you watch football on the weekend or baseball or anything else, you know, they're talking about a tennis elbow or sprained ankle or torn this, torn that. I mean, they're athletes. I mean, you have to go through, everybody goes through it. I mean, same as the human sports do.
All right, Ralph, here we go. We have about 2 minutes left, and we're going to do a little thing here I like to do with all the trainers at the end of this program. I like to let people know a little something about you that maybe they wouldn't ordinarily get to. So we're gonna play a little game. It is five fast facts to know about trainer Ralph Nix. And I'll ask you five questions. You can answer them very quickly, and we'll blast right through them, okay?
All right.
All right, so here you go. The first one, we'll start you off easy. Chocolate or vanilla?
Chocolate.
All right. Your favorite movie of all time?
I'm not much of a movie fan.
All right. How about this?
Fast Times at Ridgemont High.
There you go. All right. So your favorite sport outside of horse racing?
Golf.
Favorite vacation destination?
Where there's palm trees and beaches.
Well said. All right. And if you could plan your last meal, and we hope it's not today, but if you could plan your last meal, what are you going to have?
Boiled crawfish.
That's a first.
That is a first. That's excellent. Good call.
I'm a Cajun boy. I'm a Texas Cajun boy. What do you expect?
Yeah, exactly. All right, so I'm going to give you a bonus question, too. Here you go. Your favorite two-year-old filly of all time?
I think that's an easy one. I don't even have to say the name. He's got that answer.
Ralph Nix, ladies and gentlemen. Ralph, has been an absolute delight. Thank you for spending some time with us here on Trainer Talk, and congratulations on all your success and that victory by Caledonia Road, and, man, continued success, brother. Well done.
Well, thank you, guys. Y'all have a good day. Thanks for having me, and hopefully we'll get to do this again, and good luck and safe racing to everybody in the industry.
All right. Thanks, Ralph. Don't forget, if you missed any portion of the show, head to our website, horseracingradio.net, and check out the podcast at your leisure. It's all there, horseracingradio.net. And, of course, follow us on Twitter at HRRN. Great guy.
Yeah, that was fun.
Great guy. Really, really one of the good guys in the sport of thoroughbred racing. All right, for our producer, Lee Delapina, for Jude Feld, I'm Mike Penna. Thanks for listening to Trainer Talk, presented by Fasic Tipton.